At your Bibles, you might open them to Acts chapter 13. Acts chapter 13. As we look at this passage, we are reminded that Paul and Barnabas were members of the church at Antioch. It was one of the earliest and first of the non-Jewish congregations. And Acts chapter 13 in the opening verses lets us know that the Holy Spirit guided the brethren there at Antioch to send Paul and Barnabas forth to take the message of the gospel across the globe. And so they prayed and laid hands upon them and commissioned them for service and sent them forth. What I'd like us to do tonight is think a little bit about how Paul did mission trips. I'd like us to look at some patterns and habits he had as he took the message of the gospel to the world. In the book of Acts, we have a record of at least three such mission trips that he was involved in that are recorded for us. And if you look at what Paul did, Paul had a habit of doing things a certain way as he took the message of the gospel. You'll find that his work basically was laid out, his plan was laid out with a focus on evangelism, a focus on education, a focus on encouragement, and a habit of explanation. And as we think about that and think about Paul's mission work, I want us to think about our mission work and especially our most recent trip to Panama. As we journeyed from here in Columbia, Tennessee, down to the tip of Central America, as you can see on the map over my head, and that region of the world that is basically a bridge between Central America and South America. And what I hope you'll see as we share a few moments together is that we're doing nothing more than what Paul did some 2,000 years ago. So we think about the nation of Panama. The word means an abundance of fish. It's a country of 3.2 million people. And you might notice that the per capita income is $6,800 a year. Yes, I said $6,000, a little over $800 a year. When you begin to see what they make and compare that to maybe our yearly incomes, you can begin to understand why when we go over there, we often are asking folks to pitch in funds so that we can help them with various needs that they have. We know that members of the Lord's Church were in the country holding Bible studies and worship services at least as early as the 1940s. These were soldiers who were stationed in Panama. There was a school started there. The Pan American Bible School was started in 1963. That school is now known today as the Bible School of the Americas. And that's the one our folks are most familiar with, or the title or name they're most familiar with. Graymere got involved in the work in Panama in 1996. A group went over there from Graymere. Those who are still here are Virgil and John Z. Lewis and Charles Smith, I believe, were among that first crew. And they went over to look at the Bible School of the Americas, and more particularly, to look at the children's home there on the campus, which did not yet have any students, but to see if that would be a good work for us to get involved in. And they came back and reported great opportunities to our elders, and we've been involved in that work ever since. There are approximately 200 congregations of the Lord's Church in Panama, and somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 Christians. Now, I want you to think about that number. 6,000 to 8,000 Christians among 3.2 million people. I know we've been going a lot since 1996, but our work has only just begun. Now, when we're usually in Panama, there are really multiple teams within a team. Many times we're at two or three different places at the same time. As we look at things that were happening on this trip, we had some working in La Chorrera, which is off to the west, about an hour's drive from Panama City. The main group was working just on the eastern side of Panama City in a region known as Las Mañanitas, out by the airport area. And then we also had a group that went into the Cuna region, and they worked there at a couple of places that are both within about an hour and a half of Lake Bayano, which is the largest lake in the country of Panama. Now, I want you to think about something as far as Paul's work. We see an illustration here in Acts chapter 20 and verse 4 of the fact that Paul needed a team to pull off his mission work. Paul understood that he was not a lone ranger and he couldn't do it by himself. And you can see there on the screen some of the names of people who traveled the world with him. They would come and go. They would join him for a while and he would leave some of them at a city to continue to work with the congregation. He would send others with messages on to other congregations or to make preparations for where he was about to go. But Paul understood it took a team to carry out the Lord's work across the globe. Likewise, it takes a team working together and everybody doing their part to make it work when we do a mission trip to Panama. You can see there a picture of this year's team, and you'll see not only our folks in the picture, but you can also see a number of Panamanians in the picture. And a lot of these folks are translators and co-teachers, and it takes all of us working side by side, whether we understand each other's language or not, working together to carry out what needs to happen. If you look at the list, there are 34 folks that were part of our mission team. 21 members of that team were members here at Graymere. 13 came from other congregations and joined us. One of the things we dealt with this year, in fact, we had more obstacles to overcome this year than ever before. But one of the problems we dealt with was that we had 10 members of our team that canceled out literally at the last minute, within the last 2 or 3 days. And there were a lot of reasons for this: passport problems, family illness, job problems, the weather. You remember we had the big snowstorm. In fact, a big chunk of our team that did make it arrived a day late. So they had to rush in on Sunday night and make preparations to start the VBS on Monday morning. And one of our losses was Brother Ken Young. And Ken is our team leader in country. And he is a tremendous, tremendous asset. And to give you an idea of his importance, it took 2 bus drivers and 3 elders to cover all of his work while he was out of country. And we really hope that he'll be back with us next year. But all those who pitched in did a great, great job. But it takes all these folks working together. And I don't know if you notice up on the screen, 8 different states in the United States are represented on this particular team. It also takes a lot of folks doing a lot of behind-the-scenes jobs. I think of folks like Charles Smith and Kenneth Corder who spend the day running all across the country getting whatever we need. I view Charles Smith as like a requisitions officer in the military, one of those guys that can find anything anywhere on the planet. And when you've got folks trying to prepare meals and prepare classes and they've got supplies they need, etc., you've got to have somebody to be able to find a store that has it and will brave the Panama traffic to try to get it and bring it back. We've got folks like Miss Apollonia washing clothes really almost all day, every day, because a lot of folks take so many supplies and so many gifts for other people, we don't take many clothes. And so to have clean clothing, most of us are getting laundry done every day. You wear it, you have an extra pair, you get it washed and swap them out the next day. And Miss Apollonia makes a huge difference in that regard. We've got a cooking team that cooks 3 wonderful meals a day. Folks make a lot of sacrifices to go to Panama, but we don't lose weight because we've got a great group of folks under the oversight of Greg Philpott that keep us fed throughout the week, and that is a full-time job. You'll notice Jonathan Winchester down at the corner of this particular picture. That's him preaching on Sunday morning, and he did a fabulous job in his lessons to the local congregation on Sunday. Jonathan is a key cog in what we do there. He works with Latin American missions. He makes many trips over there. He speaks the language. He knows the people. And really, he and Charles Smith are the ones that do all the legwork, all the planning, organizing, hotels, flights, etc. come through them. And not only is Jonathan able to set that up, but he's able to get that at a price that we can afford because of his contacts. But I also want to say that I think a very important component of this team consists of the people in this auditorium. I don't care if you've ever been outside of Colombia. You are a valuable part of what we do. You are as important as any person who's been to Panama 15 times. We absolutely cannot do it without you. Your prayers, your encouragement, your gifts make a world of difference. And I know a lot of you give things to folks who are getting ready to go to help them do their jobs. You give money and other things. And I think about just folks who brought me things. I think about the Skelton family that brought me clothing that was Brother Carmack's, that went to 27 gospel preachers in an afternoon class in Panama. My guess is, I feel confident to say, there are a number of preachers who preached the gospel today in clothing that they wouldn't have had were it not for Carmack Skelton. And I'm going to tell you, I think that's a pretty awesome thing. And I told them they had big shoes to fill when they put on his clothes. I want us to think about all those folks who donated toys and money to go towards balls and shoes and all those things that we give out at villages and VBS and to students' children, etc. Money went towards the building and finishing, completing of a Kuna building at one of the congregations in the Kuna region. Some funds went to buy chairs for the local congregation there in Panama City. That's your doing. You are an important part of what we do in Panama. As you look at what Paul did on his mission trips, Paul's ultimate goal was to preach the gospel where it had not been preached. He wanted folks who had not heard about Jesus to be able to hear about Jesus. And so that's a part of what we do. We want folks who don't know Jesus to know Jesus. Let me give you an illustration. Last year we went to the village of Ikandi, which is over in the Kuna region of the country. It is a village on the shores of Lake Bayano, which is a man-made lake, as I mentioned before, was the largest one in the country. And it takes about an hour and 15 minutes by boat to get from the landing across to this particular village. When we went to this village last year, we did a number of different things. We had a Bible class for adults and children. There was a ladies' class for the children. We gave gifts. We took family photos. So many of these folks in these villages, they've never seen a picture of themselves, much less have one on the wall of their hut. So we take a camera, and Becky Smith takes her portable printer, and we take family portraits, print it out, they watch us print it out, and they just absolutely love it. So all of that's going on, and as an end result of what we did there last year, there was a young man by the name of Jonathan that was baptized. Jonathan just so happened to be the son of the chief. You need to understand there was no congregation of the Lord's Church in Ikandi before we went there. And Jonathan was baptized while we were there. So we wanted to go back this year and visit and see how things were doing. And we did a lot of the same things, especially working with the children and so forth. But what we found when we were there was a young man named Jonathan, who I think now is about 19 years old, who is trying to be faithful to God and has a dream and a hope of becoming a student at the Bible School of the Americas in the San Blas region. There are two Bible Schools of the Americas in Panama, one in Panama City and one in the Kuna region. He wants to go to that school and study Bible, and the chief of the village told us while we were there, we want him to come back to our village and tell our people about Jesus. I think that's fantastic. That is why we go. I do also want to tell you something else. Latin American Missions is concerned that they are going to have to close the school at the Bible School of the Americas because right now they don't have the funds to keep it open. And so I just want to mention that to you while we're talking about that. I don't know if you can see in the middle of the screen between the two pictures of Jonathan, the one when he's baptized and the one this year, but it's a box of idols. It is a carving of their gods. And as you look at that, I want you to realize what he left and what he's trying to lead his country out of. I think another example of evangelism is what we do in the Vacation Bible School. We've got children who come in. Many of them know little about Jesus and the Bible. Some of them, what they've gotten, they only have gotten by coming to Vacation Bible School with us or with another group once or twice a year. As you look at what's on the screen, you can see a layout of what our folks do in Vacation Bible School. The focus this year was walking in the footsteps of Jesus. And Jewel Smith, and I think Kathy Porter and others help her, they work all year long laying out these small children's classes and a plan of attack and the teachers working on them. So you can see throughout the week they looked at Jesus the Son, Jesus the Teacher, Jesus the Healer, and Jesus the Friend to make sure these children grow up knowing our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I wanted to show you this picture. These kids come to VBS in all kinds of ways. I've seen them in the back of pickups. I've seen folks show up in taxi cabs. I've seen them walking. But what you see here is a little boy who put his younger brother on the back of his bicycle and with his bicycle brought him to Vacation Bible School and dropped him off. For many of them, that is the highlight of their year. As you look at this particular picture of some of our classes taking place, you can see that we have classes for all different ages starting at the age of 3. And really from 3 up to 10, we have the boys and girls together. Once they turn 11, we start splitting up the classes, and the 11 and 12-year-olds and the teenagers are in separate boy and girl classes. And so throughout the week, they're studying those things that we talked about on that back page or the last page, and it's being tailored to where they are in their maturity and in their growth. Also, I want you to notice on this page, again, some more pictures of some of our other classes, but I want you to look at the numbers, especially down in the right-hand corner. These are the numbers for the last day of Vacation Bible School, when our numbers are usually at their highest. We had 445 students in our classes. I want you to compare that to the attendance that we have in some of our Vacation Bible Schools right here in Columbia. In addition to that, we had 88 teachers, translators, assistants, and guests in these classes. And let me tell you something about the guests. You need to understand, if you've got a class full of four-year-olds, you're not just getting four-year-olds. Odds are you're getting a parent attached to at least half of those four-year-olds. And so what our teachers do is they, first of all, a lot of them incorporate the parents into what's happening in the class and getting them to help. But it's also a great opportunity. Because when you're telling the four-year-old about the story of Jesus healing a blind man, guess who else heals that story? That little boy or little girl's mama. And then they can go back and talk about what they learned together at Vacation Bible School. Also, as I think about evangelism and I think about these classes, I was reminded of a comment that was made by my sister. She was one day talking before or after class, and one of the ladies from La Torera that comes to help us made the statement you can see on the screen, "We learn so much from watching you teach." And Tracy said, I've heard this several times since I started going. And what she's found is that it's not just the students who are being taught, but those who work alongside of us say, "You don't know what a tremendous thing you're doing for us by letting us watch how you teach children. Let us participate with you in the teaching of children, and then we take that back to our congregations and put it to work." So not only are the students learning from the teachers are learning from each other, and in reality, the teachers are learning from the students. Not only did Paul seek to try to get the message of Christ to those who maybe didn't know it or had not heard it as much, but he also wanted to educate those who were in Christ. And so he would send folks back to congregations he had worked with, or he would find places where he could teach the Bible on a regular basis. You can see here in this text in Acts chapter 19 that he started going to the synagogue, and then when that no longer worked, it says he took the brethren and went to a school and started teaching at a regular basis there. He understood the need to educate, grow, and mature the new babes in Christ. Something else Paul also understood is that you've got to train leaders. The key to success of any congregation and the spread of the gospel is you've got to have leaders who will stand for truth and will help the congregation to mature and grow into the likeness of Christ. And so you find Paul would train and appoint elders in the various congregations, and you'd find an example of what he did with Timothy. Timothy was likely a young man, who was converted in Paul's first missionary journey. Then when he went back through the region on a following journey, he took that young man and made him a part of his missionary team. I think about that young boy named Jonathan at Ekandi. First trip through, he became a Christian. Next time we come through, we find out he wants to be a preacher. And so that's what Paul did. Paul took young men like Timothy. He took men like the elders at Ephesus, and he helped them to learn to be what God wanted them to be. Some examples of how we do that in Panama, I think one example is what we do in our afternoon classes. Every day we have a class for women and a class for men. I want you to understand that folks who come into this class come in from all over Panama, largely or in part for these classes. You can look at the numbers on the screen. You can see, I think on the last day there were 46 in the ladies' class. Out of that group, approximately 42 were Panamanian students, and then you have teachers, translators, and guests that are in the class. You can see there were about 38 on the last day in the men's class, 27 of them Panamanian students. But you've got folks coming in from Bocas del Toro and Boquete over on the western region of Panama, and then you've got folks that are coming over from Ibiti and Puerto Limon over on the eastern side, going a little bit towards Colombia. They're coming from across this nation to listen to somebody teach them about how to be a leader in the Lord's church. And these classes are made up of local preachers and leaders and Bible class teachers, the wives of preachers, the ladies who are teaching in the congregations, the ladies and the children. And these classes make a huge, huge difference in their lives. put a picture down in the corner. You can see the kids out playing in the field. While all this is going on, if we're going to be able to teach and have the attention of the moms and dads, there needs to be somebody taking care of their children. And so we've got a crew that takes care of the children of all the folks in our afternoon classes while we're doing it. And Becky Smith headed up that group today. You can see them out in the field playing with their parachute and giant ball, grande pelota, out in the middle of that field. You can't do one without the other. And so one may be teaching the gospel, but the other is just as important in the teaching of the gospel. Another thing we did, we started last year a class during Vacation Bible School for young teenage boys to teach them how to put devotionals together and lead in worship services. This is our second year. We had 14 young men to graduate from this class. 9 of the young men conducted the devotional on Thursday night. And I wanted to tell you that during the class, the Panamanians who participate in the class found out that we do a preacher's camp here, and they have asked us to come back next year and to conduct a Panamanian future ministers training camp. So we're kind of in the process of seeing the feasibility of that, and that can work, but I just want you to see the impact that these things are having on these young people. Not only do we want to evangelize and educate, but we just need to encourage people. If you look in Acts chapter 14, it says that Paul went back to some of the congregations he started, strengthening the souls of the disciples and encouraging them to continue in the faith. And there's a lot of what we do that is about encouragement. I think about the villages of Ipati and the villages of Porto Limon, for example, congregations that have been around for a few years. They have established preachers, and how we try to go back and follow up and encourage these congregations. The congregation at Ipati, is the minister there is Marcelino Jr. And this is Marcelino and his family in this picture. He is a graduate of the Bible School of the Americas. Okay, and we support every year 5 students at that school. And most of us remember when he was a student. And now he is the preacher at this particular congregation. He is supported by the congregation in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, where my parents attend. And so my dad went along on this trip so he can do a report like we're doing here back at the congregation in Elizabethtown. So we did classes for the children, gave out gifts. We had a devotional for the members of the congregation. And something I don't think we've ever shown you before, but if you look up in the top right corner up there, you've got a picture of a number of the members of the congregation. And you've got, I think, about 23 ladies who are members of the congregation that are in that particular picture. I also want you to notice over here, you can see all the children holding up their tennis balls. A lot of you brought me tennis balls and other gifts. They're holding up the gifts we gave them. And the older man who's standing in the middle of them is Marcelino Sr. This is the son, this is the father. And Marcelino Sr. is supported by the Graymere congregation, and he works with multiple congregations in the Cuna region of Panama over in the eastern side of the country. We also went back to the village of Porto Limon. And Rodney Barcello is the minister for this congregation. He is supported by Graymere. You can see him pictured here. Let's see what side we're on. Up here he is living right now with the former chief of the tribe. They've had a new chief that's come in since we were there last. And so Rodney is living with the previous chief. We were able to worship with the brethren on that Sunday morning. There were about 160 kids there, as well as a number of adults. We noticed when we did the Lord's Supper, and I want you to notice up in the corner screen, you see the guy in the green shirt? You see what he's holding in his hand? It's a hat. When we did the collection, we literally passed the hat. Okay, y'all can laugh about that later. But anyway, when we worshiped with them, what we noticed was there were 20 Christians in Porto Limon who observed the Lord's Supper that day. Just a few years ago, there was no congregation in Porto Limon. And so God is at work at this village, and what we try to do is go in and do everything we can to encourage and build up the people. One of the things we learned while we were there is we learned that the new chief is a member of the Lord's church. And that gives us a great opportunity and an inroad. In fact, he not only invited us back, but he wants us to come back and build a building where the congregation has a place to meet without having to borrow the community's facilities. In fact, he said, "We'll give you the land if you'll build the building." So that's something we'll talk about in the future. One great area of encouragement is all the help that is given on campus to the Bible School of the Americas and the Children's Home. As you look at the screen here, you see some of those that are on our building team and a list of some of the things that they did. For example, they built a covered porch over the married students section. You may say, well, what's the big deal about that? Well, remember, when they wash their clothes, it's probably washed in a sink and it's hung out on a line. I know that's foreign to a lot of folks in the audience. They don't know what that is. You mean they don't have, you know, dryers? No. Okay, so they're hanging it out. Well, in the rainy season, it's really a lot of fun trying to dry out your clothes. Okay, because it rains most every day. And so one of the reasons they built this overhang on the back was in part so that they could have a place to hang their clothing to let it dry and to keep it out of the direct rain. They constructed metal doors. They fixed an electrical box. They built some closets while they were there. They did backhoe work. I just want you to kind of see a list of the kinds of things they did. And as you think about what they did, we got some numbers here, and I appreciate Jim giving me these numbers. But it was $6,400. About $1,400 of that was donated by the team. The rest is budgeted into our budget every year, and we go over there just for these kinds of projects. There's really no money value you could put on the hours and hours of work these guys put in. 95 to 99 degree heat day after day to take care of this campus. I don't think I'm overstepping my bounds to say that if our team doesn't come in once a year and keep up that children's home and keep up that campus, in part, I think it falls down around them. Because it's amazing what happens from year to year till we can get back there. And so that's an encouragement that allows the school to keep going and the children's home to keep going. Another reason we go is to encourage the folks at the children's home. And you can see a picture of Anibal and Nellie, the parents of the home, and some of the children. I want you to think about the sign there. Can you see the sign in the corner? Santiago 127, that's James 127. And that is on the sign right out in front of the children's home. And that's the passage where James says, pure religion and undefiled before God is to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction. That home is a living embodiment of that verse. And that's part of the reason we're there. And as you look at that picture of some of those students, see, it's over in this corner. I want you to notice a couple. If you look in the back right corner of that picture, you'll see a young man in a black T-shirt. His name is Ezekiel. The last 2 years, he has participated in a devotional for the entire group over at the main congregation while we were there. You can see in the other corner a boy in a black shirt with some white lettering on the front. His name is Enrique. When he came to our young men's leadership class, he wasn't a Christian. But we talked about making God the center of your life, that before you can lead the Lord's church in worship, God needs to be the Lord of your life. Enrique was baptized the week after we left. In fact, one man was baptized while we were there, but other Bible studies were started and four other people were baptized the week after we left. I want you to notice one girl. Can you see the girl in the middle, kind of at the back, that stands kind of taller than everybody else? Her name is Judith. We would say Judith. But many of us remember watching her grow up. I think about a few years ago, now she's 17. She's nearing the end of her high school days and having to move eventually in the next year or two out of the children's home. But I remember a little 13-year-old girl when we all went over to the children's home to visit one night and the kids sang to us. And Judith got up to talk and she said, you know, some of us used to sleep on the streets. She said, we used to have a stone for a pillow. She said, we used to use cardboard and plastic for our blankets. We didn't have a roof over our head, our food in our bellies. But she says, now we have a bed. Now we all have pillows and blankets and a roof and our stomachs are full. And she said, it's because of you. I don't know about anybody else who was in that room, but I'll never forget that talk as long as I live. And what's more incredible is to watch this young lady, this little girl, blossom into a young Christian woman whose faith still is strong, and she is one of the leaders that those small children look up to in that children's home. That is why we go. We are also there to encourage the students. There are 15 students in the Panama campus of the Bible School of the Americas. There were 5 students at the San Blas School, and that's usually about average. You have anywhere from 20 to 25 students at the two schools. You can see a picture here of, I believe, 7 of the 8 students who will graduate next December. Remember that Graymere supports 5 of the students at the school every year. I did in my dissertation, I included both of these schools in my dissertation, so I asked them a lot of questions to kind of find out what they were planning to do. And so I asked them, what are your plans for when you graduate? What areas of ministry do you want to go into? And you need to remember, they could check more than one, and several of them did. But I believe it was 73% of them wanted to be preachers. 31% approximately wanted to be youth ministers, which is interesting because that's kind of a new phenomenon in Panama, but they're beginning to have youth ministers in the country. There were 26% of them that wanted to be Bible class teachers, and 10% of them, 1 out of 10 of them, wants to take the gospel to another country, and they want to be missionaries. And I asked them, what is it that motivated you to enter ministry? Their number one answer, given by 18 of the 19 men in those two schools, was a concern for lost people. They're not in it for the money. In fact, when we asked them how they expected to be supported, 40% of them expect to totally support themselves. And somewhere around 60 to 70% of them either expect to totally support themselves or to have a little bit of help, but also support themselves. They're there to change people's lives. 26% of them said that they are in ministry because they want to go back home and start a congregation where no congregation exists where they came from. That is why we go. The Apostle Paul in Acts chapter 14, verse 27, went back to his sponsoring congregation and reported to them all that he had done. He talked about his evangelism, his education, and his encouragement. And that's all we've tried to do tonight. And I hope you see that we're not there on vacation. There are things we enjoy about being there, but if it's a vacation, it is the most tiring and gut-wrenching vacation that I've ever taken. But it's also among the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. We go back because it changes our lives. We lost 10 people, and so folks had to step up to the plate and do things they'd never done before. When 10 folks didn't show up, Becky Smith in Panama taught her very first Bible class because the Lord needed her to. I think about in the top right-hand corner of this picture, Ticker Dawsey. Ticker 5 years ago was not a Christian, living down in Pearlington, Mississippi. Didn't know the Lord, didn't have a relationship with Him. But a hurricane came through and devastated his home and his community. And a bunch of folks from Tennessee and a lot of folks from Graymere, they traveled down to the border of Mississippi and Louisiana. If you cross the river from his house, you're in Louisiana. He's a shrimp boat captain. That's all he's known for much of his life. But they went back there and they rebuilt his home and they rebuilt his community and they told him about the Lord and in the process helped him to rebuild his life. And this time when we went, he left his home country to go to a foreign land, first time as a missionary. And you know what he did all week? He spent the week rebuilding things, just like somebody had rebuilt things for him. I think about Ryan Begay on the left side of this picture. A year ago, Ryan Begay was in the midst of a life in which he was surrounded by drug and alcohol abuse. He didn't know God. He wasn't living the life he knew he needed to be living. He wasn't around people he needed to be around. Ryan is a Navajo Indian, but Ryan came to know the gospel through Josh Austin, a minister that we support in Kayenta, Arizona. And 1 year later, he went as a missionary to Panama. In fact, they kind of kidded back and forth, especially in the Kuna villages, said he was the North American Kuna. And so the Kunas especially enjoyed talking to him. But while in Panama, he helped teach a Bible class. A year ago, he wasn't a Christian. A year later, he's inspiring young men to preach the gospel. We go because of these precious, precious children who wouldn't know about Jesus Christ if we stay at home. And when you meet these children all over that country, they will absolutely tear your hearts out. But we also go because of the incredible relationships that we build. The relationships with each other and with the folks we meet. Jim Baker said this, "This was my 14th trip in 12 years to Panama. I've seen many improvements to the campus and its buildings in these 12 years. I'm always glad to be able to help with these projects and to work with people at the school and in Panama. The thing that means the most from these 12 years are the friendships made at the school, the friends at La Chorrera, and the many others we've met while working alongside them through the years. We have become family. And being with them is like a family reunion, and we're constantly looking for more to add to our family." Paul went into the world because Jesus Christ said, go into the world and preach the gospel. He went into Macedonia because he saw a vision of a man in Macedonia saying, come and speak to us. We went to Panama because God called us to go into all the world. But we also went because Panamanian after Panamanian said, please come. You can see on the screen a common phrase that we say and hear as we're leaving Panama. It's hasta próximo año. It means we'll see you next year. And one of the questions we're asked most often when we're leaving is, will you be back? We go because God sent us. We go because our friends there invited us. And we're able to go because of the grace of God and your support. And I cannot thank you enough for that. Would you take out your songbooks and turn to the hymn of encouragement? Call is what motivates all folks who do mission work and support mission work to go and to support it. But God not only calls us to take His mission to the world, He calls us to Himself. He calls us to believe in Him and to express that faith in repentance, confession, and baptism. If you've not answered that call, He stands waiting to welcome you into His family, a family that extends across the globe. For those of us who are Christians, who have forgotten our calling, He, like He called and looked for the prodigal son, is calling us back home. If we can help you in your relationship with Him, please come as we stand and sing.